This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca, and Monday means EJ Raddick for the NHL Network, NHL Now, between the hours of 4 and 6 p.m. Eastern Time. EJ, how are you?
I am good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I get to call what turns out to be maybe a pretty significant game in Rangers history tomorrow. Rangers are taking on the Avalanche. NBC Sportsnet is the game. And I will be on the play-by-play with Dave Maloney for Igor Shesterkin's first ever game in the National Hockey League.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting, like, why now and why Hank backing him up? I thought when I first heard the news that maybe because Hank was under the weather in Vancouver that he wasn't 100% to back up Georgiev in the game tomorrow. But now we find out Hank is going to back him up. So is this team going to play with three goaltenders for the foreseeable future?
That's a great question, and I guess time will tell what the plan is going to be there. But I think that Shesterkin has certainly earned a recall and an opportunity to come up and get a chance to play in the National Hockey League, get his feet wet a little bit, and I guess we'll see what the future holds. I mean, I think if he has a 40-shot shutout against Colorado tomorrow night, I would assume he'll get another start.
Right.
and if it doesn't go as well, and, you know, maybe he'll just go back to Hartford and, continue down there. He's been just lights out good in Hartford. And, I mean, we've talked about this before, Don. I mean, it's one of these circumstances with, you know, Lundqvist at the end, with one more year left on the deal, with Georgiev emerging as a pretty good NHL goaltender. And Shesterkin has kind of really was the planned heir apparent. It's a good problem for Jeff Gordon to have, and
yeah,
sure that he's with Georgiev, he's a really good play this year. I'm sure there are teams that might be interested in Georgiev. I don't think they're planning on trading Shesterkin. I don't think Lundqvist is planning on leaving New York. I think he will be finishing his career with the Rangers based on everything we know about what he said over the last several years. So it's very interesting, and you're right. The timing is a little bit curious, but you know what? He has really earned it with his play in Hartford, and we will watch tomorrow night and see how he does and move from there.
Now, it's interesting when you look at the timing of it, but I guess you dig a little deeper. The Rangers, and I think a lot of other organizations too, They want to be able to promote guys that deserve to be promoted, and he has played so well, and he deserves that. I mean, you want to send a message to the rest of the organization that, hey, guys, this is the avenue that we expect you to take, and if you're playing well, we want to give you that chance. And with three consecutive losses in Western Canada, I think it's becoming clear now this is not a playoff team. They're going to be sellers instead of buyers. So if you're going to be trading Georgiev, if you're going to be trading Kreider, then this is when he should be up here. So that when you expect to be a contender next year, and he is going to be your goaltender moving forward, kind of like what we saw with Carter Hart last year, he'll go into that season maybe with 15, 20 games under his belt. I mean, well, maybe that's a little bit more than expected, but isn't that a good step than rather him making his debut? Now he gets to maybe be a guy that can go in next year as a number one if he plays well down the stretch this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, he's come here and he's exceeded any expectation, really. I mean, you couldn't have played much better in Hartford. I mean, the numbers, .932 save percentage, 3 shutouts, 15 wins. I mean, even in his last 4 games, the numbers have been even more outstanding. Looking at the press release here, 106 saves on his last 110 shots. So he has just been, he's been really, really terrific for them. He's 24 years of age. He's someone they've had their eye on for a long time. And like I say, Don, he is someone that we've heard would be the heir apparent, and he's taken the
step.
He's come over from the KHL, and you know the little bit of the difference in the plan is that Georgiev has come along and played well as well, and he's another good young goaltender. So, I mean, it leaves the Rangers with a lot of options moving forward, and teams are always looking. I know, like, you know, for example, Toronto is looking for another goaltender. They have very limited cap space. Someone like Georgiev could be someone they'd be interested in. San Jose is looking for goaltending help. I mean, so there's probably a market for a young man, Georgiev, who's played well in his short-term NHL career thus far. So So we'll see.
And now we look at, you're not going to have three goaltenders, so you figure at some point Georgiev is going to get dealt, because Hank just can't get moved, right? He's got the no-movement clause in his contract, number one. Number two, I don't think there's really a team out there that can take on that kind of salary, plus having him under contract for another year. So Georgiev becomes the easier guy to move, and there are teams, and you mentioned Toronto being one of them, that you can make the deal, and if you know that you're not a playoff team, and I think that's becoming clearer and clearer now with these three straight losses in Western Canada, then maybe you make that deal sooner than later.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, again, time will tell, because this might be just a case where they've identified a particular circumstance and they wanted to recall him and give him an opportunity to get his feet wet. I thought we were going to see it at some point in time, and with the trade deadline at the end of February, maybe they want to get a little bit of a peek now and give him a couple of opportunities. I mean, you just don't know if there's a deal that's imminent or not. You're right about, as we talked about, with Lundqvist, 1 year left on this deal. He's given no indication that he wants to leave. I think it's a real nice succession plan to have a Shesterkin, if he can be as anywhere near as good as he's been in the AHL, because to think he could be as good at the NHL level is, I mean, that's a high, high bar, because he's been great in the American League so far. But I think that's a terrific plan to have, you know, him come in and maybe next year with Hank as the two and Shesterkin as kind of, or maybe it's just 1A and 1B.
Yeah.
And, you know, and have that development and have someone like Henrik Lundqvist there. And, you know, who knows? Henrik Lundqvist is a competitor and he wants to play. Maybe Henrik Lundqvist, even after 1 year, decides, you know, I'm still not done playing, and stays with the Rangers on a lesser deal as the continuing mentor number two for Shesterkin. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily out of the question.
No, it's a great point.
The matter is if how much he would want to be, you know, what the compensation would be and if it would make sense right from that standpoint. But at any rate, we will see. It'll be like you made it the point at the very start. It's an interesting night in Rangers history to see a young man that has been on the radar for a while, that's played very, very well in Hartford, to get an opportunity to come up and to play against the Colorado Avalanche team that can really bring it. But it is the second of a back-to-back for the Avalanche, and you know, we'll see if you know, how the young man plays. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch.
Yeah, and you bring up Hank maybe extending his career beyond this next year. You know, I've always kind of compared the end of Hank's career to what happened with Eli with the Giants, right? Is that, you know, he's a forever type of player, but you got to move on at some point. It's very difficult to move on from a legend. The difference between football and hockey with quarterbacks and goaltenders is you don't usually play two quarterbacks. You play one. But in this day and age, a backup quarterback could play 25, 30 games. So if Hank, you know, battles for the position next year and it becomes like a 1-1A, maybe he says, you know what, I'll come back in 2021, play myself maybe 25, 30 games, be on a team that might be able to make a move here. I think he wants to win with New York. I think the Rangers are progressing towards being a playoff team at some point with the good young players that they have. And, you know, so maybe this will not be this will be a better exit than we saw with Eli Manning, right, where he hangs around a little while longer, compiles some stats, but can be a contributor to a winner down the road.
I guess it really, at the end of the day, it will really depend upon, you know, Henrik and what his feelings are and how he's playing and how much he wants to play. I mean, there's so many things that will have to happen between now and then. The one thing we do know is that he's under contract for another year. He's shown every desire, every indication to want to stay and be a Ranger to the end of his career. And he's played pretty well thus far this season. I mean, you know, he's got a 9-10 save percentage behind a team that gives up good chances in games. And so, for me, he's still a viable goaltender. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But Shesterkin does seem like the guy that is the guy moving forward, and the way that he's played in Hartford gives us every indication to think that, you know, that will be the plan.
Wanted to talk a little bit Winter Classic with you because you were there. You called the game with Joe Bettinati, right, internationally.
Yes,
so that's a cool gig to have. Joe's a good guy to work with, and I'm sure you had a ball.
He's a real pro, great guy, and, you know, I always joke with him. I said, well, you know, I'm going to make your life miserable for a day, and we just have a good laugh. It's a fun event, and it's a nice opportunity for me to do that, to be in that role. So it was great. It was a great event. Dallas, having, you know, Don, you know my history. I spent 6 years in Dallas. In the early 90s, I moved down there for a magazine job that was involved with hockey, but there was no hockey team there. They just, the business was run out of Dallas. And I got to be on the ground when the Minnesota North Stars moved to Dallas, and I was at the first game there, and I was, you know, in that first season, which was a terrific, fun season for that organization. They made the playoffs, and Mike Bonanno, I think that was the, it might have been the year he had 50 goals, but it was terrific. And, you know, to see how that organization planted the seeds in those, you know, 93, 94, 95, building rinks, reaching out to the fans and younger people. The high school program started to grow. The youth hockey started to grow. We have guys that have kind of grown up in the Dallas area that have gone on to play the National Hockey League or play at Division I college hockey or play in Europe. And it's grown exponentially over the 30 or, you know, less than 30 years, but, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood, 25, 27 years. And to think that now here we are on January 1st, 2020, and we have 85,000 people in a historic open-air Cotton Bowl.
Right.
The Dallas Stars and the Nashville Predators was, you know, was sensational. And the league did, I thought, a great job with it. And I know in the aftermath, the local media in Dallas, which has really been unbelievably focused on the Cowboys coaching search, which they're probably thrilled is coming to a conclusion as we speak. But they really, it was really well received by the local media there in Dallas. And so it was a great thing, I think, for that organization.
Yeah, just, and you got to see the forest through the trees, right? I mean, we could talk about the ratings or and all that, but, you know, we're talking about a sport. All right, that if you grew up with this sport, to see an outdoor game in Dallas between the Dallas Stars and the Nashville Predators, and that just blows my mind, and just where this sport has come from, to not only having teams in the South, but those teams be able to draw 85,000 people to an event and get, you know, 2 million people to be able to watch it on television going up against a college football game. I mean, that's pretty significant, and I think that's where you got to look at it. It's all relative, right? You can't compare it to the other sports. You got to compare it to where this sport was. And can you imagine, you were down there before a team got there. When Dallas came here, could you have envisioned, you know, that this would be the end game, where not only would they be popular and win a Stanley Cup, but also be able to play in an event like that there could even be an event like that, never mind them playing in it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, because that there could even, you know, have been an event like that. So it was great. It was a fun game. I mean, Stars jumped out, or the Predators jumped out to a 2-0 lead. You had the Corey Perry incident with Ryan Ellis. He was subsequently suspended for 5 games. He was tossed from that game. The Stars rallied in the game. It was a penalty shot early that was missed by Dennis Gurianov. The Stars rallied throughout the game, ended up winning 4-2, so a great win for the Stars, who've dealt with a lot of different adversity this year, from a really bad start to the season to a mysterious coaching firing to, you know, even a Winter Classic that started off with just about everything going wrong in the first 10 minutes. So, you know, to get a victory, and for a Nashville Predators team, it was much, much more of the same for them. I mean, a good start, but they weren't able to close and end up on the short end of things. So, you know, it had all the elements, Don. Like I said, and the conditions were ideal. I mean, it was 50-ish degrees, a little bit of wind. So if you were there, it was cold, but not freezing. And, you know, you could wear a, you know, a jersey and a sweatshirt, let's say, if you were in the crowd and feel comfortable. And, you know, it overcast. There was no really glare to worry about. I mean, I know, talking to people with the league, that if it had been a bright, sunny day like it was the day before, and the day after, they likely would have had to move the game to a 4:00 start. So they were very fortunate with everything that happened with it, and there was no precipitation, no issues in that regard. So it was just a terrific. They were lucky in all quarters, and give the NHL and Steve Mayer and that group, and, you know, the commissioner and the whole group, they do a great job pulling off this event. It's a wonderful event to attend, as I'm sure that anyone who has ever gone to one has really enjoyed it.
Now, 2021 is going to be in Minnesota involving the Wild. I think that's an excellent choice, and much speculation on who their opponent may be. I know there are people in Canada kind of hoping the Winnipeg Jets will get the nod, and there's probably people who just assume you got to go Blackhawks or Blues for the television ratings. To me, I think you go Avalanche, right? With all that good young talent, it's a very good hockey team. You got to stick with the divisional opponent. I think it should be Colorado. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I mean, I think the two teams I think about right away are the Blues and the Avalanche because they're both division rivals. The Blues are a Stanley Cup champion that, you know, we'll see how things go for them this year, but they've been in the public eye. We know their players, high-end type players. And the Avalanche for the same, very same reasons that you mentioned that, you know, this is an up-and-coming team with really talented young players, and they'd like to spotlight them. I think the Avalanche are going to be the Chicago Blackhawks kind of this decade when we think of outdoor games. They're playing in, I guess it's still a Stadium Series game that's coming up in February in Colorado Springs. They're playing the LA Kings. So I would suspect that, you know, those are a couple teams that would be thought of, and you're right, there has been some discussion of the Winnipeg Jets just because they were geographically, again, divisional rival, geographically pretty close. The Jets fans would certainly travel. Not as big a venue in Minnesota as the Cotton Bowl, so, you know, you're not as concerned with, you know, hey, we're trying to sell 85,000 seats. But I'll be curious to see what the decision is. But, you know, for me, I think St. Louis or Colorado would make the most sense.
Yeah, should be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to that coming up in 2021. A couple of things before we get to the tweets. Ilya Kovalchuk is now a member of the Montreal Canadiens, signs a two-way contract. It's a no-brainer for Montreal. There's very little, if any, risk in making the signing. Could this end up being like Kovalev Mach 2 in Montreal? Could he find his second win there and be a contributor to a Canadiens team that still has a shot to make the playoffs?
Well, they're certainly hoping that that's the case, and you're right. I mean, it's a low risk move by the Montreal Canadiens by Marc Bergevin, the general manager there. I mean, it's kind of one of those desperate times, calls for desperate measures kind of things. I mean, they've lost a couple of key players to injury with Jonathan Drouin and Paul Byron, and this is not a deep, deep roster. And you know, so they went out and they've made some moves. They've added Marco Scandella through a trade, who's at the end of his contract. So, again, a low risk for the Canadians. They've added Kovalchuk now. I mean, I don't know. You know, I've never been a fan of the Kovalchuk part two. I think that the LA Kings way overpaid him, as it was proven to be the case. He's into his mid-30s. He's had, you know, leg issues. He was out of the league for a long time. You know, he came back in L.A. He had some moments where he scored some goals. You know, Montreal, like, to have that big right shot on the power play, they've got Shea Weber. So, you know, where does he fit into the power play? But, again, for them, it's a very low-risk move. And, if you know, Ilya Kovalchuk obviously believes he can still compete at this level, and that's, you know, that's what great players always feel, that they can continue to compete. And this is an opportunity for him to make a statement to everyone that thinks that he can. So they have that going for him. It starts tonight. They take on the Winnipeg Jets, and we will see if he is able to be a helpful player. I believe he's going to be playing with Dano and Tatar on basically the top line. So how it plays out.
All right, let's go to the tweet. You ready?
Okay, let's go.
All right, Tom says, Happy New Year. Thoughts on the puck that hit the TSN camera in the World Juniors gold medal game? Did the refs interpret the rule correctly? Also, what players stood out?
Well, I mean, it looked to me that it should have been a penalty because it hit a camera that was mounted on the back of the glass, and it hit the camera, which indicates that the puck probably would have carried over the glass.
Right.
The rule is kind of vague in some ways, and they interpreted it the way they did. At the end of it, the Russian team did have a power play at that time, and they did have the goaltender pulled, so there was opportunity there. Shortly after that, they took a penalty, and that kind of ended their opportunity to rally and to rally back and then tie that game up. So it's, let's face it, I mean, think of the odds of that happening in that moment. I think in the future they will have a more clear-cut rule on that. but it did look like it was going to carry over that secondary glass and go over if it had not hit that camera. And, you know, it's just funny how the way things worked out. And here's, you know, TSN, this is obviously the television provider that has been really made that tournament what it is in a lot of ways in the coverage in Canada. And, you know, a camera that they installed there ends up helping Team Canada survive a late charge. So, you know, like I said, I think there's room for – seems like the rule is a little bit vague and just one of those things that happens in sports sometimes. And, you know, again, the Russians did have an opportunity with the power play to make something happen and couldn't get it done. So give Canada full marks for rallying late in that game and finding a way to win it.
Forever TH. This is probably one.
Hey,
you
let me ask. Well, let me ask. Add one other thing because yes. I think the tweeter who wished us Happy New Year, so Happy New Year to him, also asked me about impressions of different players.
That's right.
And you know, I was around doing the pre and post on a lot of the USA games here at the NHL Network, and the one guy and I got to see him at Boston College that really impressed me was Trevor Zegras, or Boston University, excuse me. It was Trevor Zegras. He had 9 primary assists in the tournament, and some of them were spectacular. And I really liked his game when I saw him at Boston University. They played on the road at UMass, and I was impressed by him. So he's certainly one guy to sit out for me. He's an Anaheim Ducks draft pick. I'll be curious to see how his game translates down the road to the NHL, but he's a long, lanky kid who seems like he has good hockey sense and certainly sees the ice very well. So he was somebody that impressed me. And also, I believe it's Zach Jones, who was a Ranger draft pick, who plays for UMass and played for Team USA. I hope I'm getting his name correct because sometimes I confuse my Smiths and my Joneses. I liked him in that college game I saw, and I also thought he played pretty well in the tournament, and that's someone for Ranger fans to be happy about. And I thought Kevin Ball, who is Devils and Ty Smith, those were guys that you know, the Devils are certainly high on, that have an opportunity to be part of their group down the road, that I thought played well in a gold medal winning effort for Team Canada. So you know, those were some of the guys that stood out to me.
All right. Forever TH asks something you probably want a little bit more time to chew on, but we don't have that luxury. What's your bold prediction for the decade of the 2020s? Mine is Ovi finishes only 40 goals behind Gretzky all-time on the goal list, and the Vegas Golden Knights win the most cups of the decade.
Well, I would disagree with that last bold choice.
I would as well.
Yeah.
Not that they can't win the cup this year, but I don't see them trending upward like 5-6 years from now.
Yeah, okay, that's his selections. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, I don't know how bold it is. It's certainly not bold, but I would think I would say the Colorado Avalanche are going to be the team of the decade.
That's what I would say.
I think they've just got so much young talent and guys coming. When you think of Bowen Byram as part of that as well. So that's one. I'll give you one other. I think the Ottawa Senators are going to really – I think that team will eventually be sold. I think that they will eventually have a new home somewhere in the heart of downtown Ottawa, the Canada's capital. And I think they have an opportunity to stockpile a lot of young players. They have some already. And there's a good chance with the fall of the Sharks this year that the Senators – are going to be sitting there with maybe 2 top 5, top 7 draft picks this year. I think the Ottawa Senators, as we go through this decade, are going to be much more of a factor, you know, in this league, and are going to have a chance to compete for a Stanley Cup.
And as far as Ovechkin, I don't know what number we're talking. What is he at, 682 now, I think, is his number?
A little more than 200 back, I believe, is where we're at.
So you look at, he's only 34 years old, right? And he seems to really want to play. He's in great condition. But I'm just always cautious when we start talking, when you start to get to this age. I remember having a conversation with Michael Kay when Derek Jeter got 3,000 hits. He's like, this guy's going to get 4,000 hits. I'm like, he's not going to get 4,000 hits. I said, yeah, but look, guys are, as they get older, there's going to be a drop off. There just has to be. You just can't start.
And there's injury. Derek missed, I believe, an entire season, right?
Right. That's going to happen. And that's, you're more susceptible to injury as you get older, right? And you just can't say, well, he's a 50 goal scorer. Well, you don't know if he's going to score 50 3 years from now. I mean, already this year, he's gone a few games without scoring. We don't even know if he's going to get to 50 this year. So I think he's going to get over 800, but to 894, I would think that's going to be very difficult to do.
Yeah, I mean, he's on pace, you know, this year to be in the 40s again, but, like, you know, that's a drop-off from 51 last year. So, I mean, you know, and if it can, you know, but then again, Alex's career has been interesting because, you know, you look at it, I mean, all the way through, he's had these kind of peaks and valleys. I mean, you know, in 09, 10, he had 50, and then the next year he had 32, and then he had 38. Then the following year in a shortened season, he had 32 again, then he had 51, 53, 50. So, I mean, he's had kind of these circumstances. In 16, 17, for example, he had 33 goals and 69 points. The following year, he had 49 goals. So, I think it's a much more interesting conversation now than it was 3 or 4 years ago. But there's going to be a lot of things that are going to have to happen. He's going to have to stay healthy. The Capitals are going to have to stay really good. I think he's got a chance because, you know, he's been with Backstrom for so long, but they also have Kuznetsov there, and he's worked with him as well. And Kuznetsov being a really high-end younger centerman, that's somebody that can continue to get the puck to Ovechkin in those areas where he can score. So, you know, like I said, I think it's a much more interesting conversation now than it was 3 or 4 years back. But I do think it's still there's a long road that he is going to have to go down. And I would also say with Alex, you know, based on the era in which he plays, I think you can really make the case that he's the greatest goal scorer this game has ever seen. Yes. And I'm a big Mike Bossy guy. And obviously Wayne doing what he's done, and there's been a number of great goal scorers over the years, going back to the Rocket, Gordie Howe, and others. But to think that Alex Ovechkin can consistently score at the level he has scored at in an era where it's harder to score goals, where the goaltending has never been better, where the video work of trying to stop an individual, no secret where Ovechkin does a lot of his work in that left wing circle, and yet no one has been able to really stop him. So, you know, I think you could really make a case that he might be the greatest goal scorer ever to play this game.
Chris, he says, hi, guys. Us Flyer fans have heard very little regarding the health of Nolan Patrick, considering the need to approach head conditions with delicacy. If he doesn't play this year, should there be concern the migraines could be career-threatening?
Well, absolutely, there should be concern. But that said, I mean, I can remember going way back early in this guy's career, Patrice Bergeron missed a lot of time with concussion injury. I believe he missed nearly a whole season early on in his career. And so you can only hope that whatever's going on with Nolan Patrick's health is something that can be controlled or managed, and that he will be able to resume his career. But certainly there's concern. I mean, I don't believe he's played a game this year. So, you know, it's really unfortunate for him. And, you know, that's about really all I could say about it. I mean, not being a doctor, not being up on exactly what his medical circumstances are, but just knowing that he hasn't played this year, I mean, I think there's a lot of room for, or a lot of reason to be concerned. And it's really unfortunate because in that draft, when you think about it, the players that went after Patrick are having substantial impact around the league. When you think about Haskinen in Dallas and McCarr in Colorado and Pettersson in Vancouver, those were the next three picks. Not to second guess what Philadelphia did, because at the time of that draft, I mean, it was clearly Nico and Nolan. And, you know, and that's how it played out. But, you know, it's really unfortunate for Nolan Patrick to have these issues. So we can only hope for his sake. I hope that, you know, that will change and he will be back playing and be a really helpful player for the Flyers.
Now, Ari tweeted a while ago before the holidays an idea for 3-on-3.
Okay.
And he said, did you speak to your friends at the NHL offices about my idea for 3-on-3 overtime? Well, now I have a chance to talk to my friends at the NHL offices, and that would be you.
Okay. Well, I'm not at the NHL office.
You're as close to it right now as possible.
Okay.
You're at least at arm's length right now. I don't have Gary Bettman on speed dial just yet, but
yeah.
I do run into Bill Daly occasionally at a restaurant close to where my mom lives, and I haven't run into him there yet. So I will ask you. His idea was, do you not allow players to exit the zone the way they're doing it 3-on-3? You know, where you're like, all right, we're going to leave the zone again. Like, would you want to see something like that? Because now it's game of keep away, right? And we've seen a lot of times you lose the face off, you lose the game, you know, because it's so difficult to get the puck back. And what happens is you bring it into the zone. Oh, we don't have an outlet. We're going to bring it back to the neutral zone again. Would you like to see a rule implemented where it would be illegal for you to leave the zone, where they blow the whistle if you've established position in the offensive zone and then just leave it on your own?
No, I don't like that rule.
Okay.
Because you've earned possession and it's part of it, and I don't want to slow it down. I don't want to stop the play and have a face-off. I want to be able to continue to play, and that's a tactic just to move out of the zone.
That's fair.
Like, I like our old idea, going back to the NHL live days, of just releasing a live leopard onto the ice during 3-on-3 to create chaos.
That's right, chaos.
Players have to make a decision. Do I want to win or do I want to save my own life?
Right.
And, that would be, I think, something dramatic for fans.
That would be very dramatic. Now, how about this? not being able to take it back on the other side of the red line.
No, I don't like it, Don. I just think that the game is a flowing game, and when you gain possession, you know, if you don't have a play, you now have the possession of the puck. If you feel there's nothing there and you want to circle back and create an advantage by getting fresh bodies on the ice,
I
don't want to start blowing the play down.
I think 3-on-3 is perfect. I love it. I love calling it. I think it's exciting. Yeah. I think it's so much fun to do. And here's the thing. It's not like you're milking the clock. It's not like you're playing keep away and you're protecting a one-goal lead. They're exiting the zone to produce an opportunity to then score. So it's not like it's really killing a lot of time. Yeah, listen, this is what I think of. Do you remember Blades of Steel? Or are you a little too old for that on Nintendo?
I'm a little too old.
All right. Well, Blades of Steel was like one of the really archaic video games for hockey, but at the time it was great. All right. And I was playing my brother in Nintendo, and he won the he had a one-goal lead going into the third. He won the face-off and then
just held the puck.
Spun in a circle for the entire period, and I ended up at when he – and then what he did was, just to add insult to injury, when he did release from spinning, he created a breakaway and scored a goal to make it 2-0 with like a second left. I picked up the Nintendo and threw it against the wall because I'm a big baby.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like that. It's not you're trying to create offense. So they come out of the zone, and you know eventually they're going to – 3 seconds later, they're going to come back in and try to score. So it's not like, oh, we got a one-goal lead. Not like you're playing a full five-minute overtime where you can score as many goals as you want. All right, I got a goal, and for the next 4.5 minutes, I'm just going to play keep away. So I'm with you. But I like the fans thinking. I don't discourage thought.
Hey, listen, it's always good. And in our game, I think we have it even more so than any other game. There's been so, you know, our fans are in hockey are, I don't know if it's critical, but there's always looking for something, ways to change something or do something different. And, you know, I think we have a pretty good game right now.
I do. I agree with you.
The things and... You know, I just don't like, you know, like I said, I don't want to stop the game for no reason. There, you gain possession, the other team has an opportunity. This is hockey. This isn't like baseball where you can't get back at the plate until there's 3 outs. You know, you can gain the puck at any moment. I mean, you can attack and forecheck.
That's true.
And try to, you know, force a turnover and gain the puck that way.
Hey.
So. Yeah, no, I wouldn't do it that way. I just think it's teams are being smart. Yeah,
think about it.
You hold it, you go back, you get your new guys on.
I like it.
You try to create an advantage.
I think what's interesting about hockey, I don't know if you've ever thought of this or we've ever discussed it. Yeah. It's the only sport that does not guarantee possession.
Yeah.
And, you know, in basketball, you score a basket, you give the ball up. The same thing in football. You kick the ball off after a score. Baseball, the inning's over, the other team gets an opportunity. Possession's not guaranteed. Theoretically, you can win a faceoff and never give it up the entire period. I mean, that's right.
That's
so that's just the way the sport is, and I think it's great. You have to earn the possession. You just, it's not gifted to you. You have to earn the possession.
Correct.
And that should go for it in overtime as well as regulation.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So I appreciate people thinking about different things. I appreciate the passion. You know, like I said, you know.
I love it.
You know, like, again, the live leopard. That would be exciting.
But, I think that's really a little excessive, but you're thinking.
That's excessive. Right now, that is excessive.
You know? And you know what you could do? You start off with a cub, and then it grows and matures, becomes part of a thing. Like, oh, I remember that leopard 10 years ago when he first came into the league. Now look at him.
But now, look at him. Listen, you just put the puck in your own net at overtime. You don't want nothing to do with this leopard.
Right. It becomes part of every team. Every team's responsible to have their own leopard. Every arena's got a leopard.
Right.
You're like, you know what? That leopard at Rogers Arena is awful. You know, we don't have any concern.
Yeah.
He's been slow since they drafted that guy.
He's very relaxed.
Oh, but that leopard at Scotiabank, man, forget it. You don't want any part of that.
Nightmare. And, like, you know, you'd have to rebuild as one of the leopards gets too old. You'd have to bring in a new leopard.
That's right. It's like a transaction.
Exactly.
You got to fit the leopard under your cap.
Trade leopard.
This is good. All right, buddy. I'm going to let you go. I know you got a lot of work to do.
I do. And so do you.
That's right. I got to get ready.
You got to get ready. It's football Monday, baby.
I know. Lots going on. I'll talk to you next Monday.
Yeah. All right, Don. Good to talk to you.
All right. Always good to talk to EJ. You want more of EJ? NHL Network, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on NHL Now. There are games tonight. Oilers, Maple Leafs. Always fun when those two teams get together. I always say that, but it's still true. 7 o'clock, Jets and the Canadiens from Montreal. As you heard EJ talking about, Ilya Kovalchuk's debut in Montreal, getting a chance to play on the top line with Deneau and Tatar. Islanders and Avalanche. Avalanche are going through this Eastern spurt here. They played the Devils, beat them 5-2 on Saturday. Now they're going to be on the island tonight. They'll be at Madison Square Garden tomorrow. Shesterkin will make his National Hockey League debut for the Rangers tomorrow. So that'll be a topic of discussion on Wednesday when we come back. And then the Blue Jackets and the Kings from Los Angeles. We'll be back with you again on Wednesday as we hook back up with Leah Hextall and get her thoughts on everything NHL. If you want to get in touch with me, at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct's the way to do it. We'll talk to you again on Wednesday. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.